With your powers combined, we are fan holes. Go,
go fan holes.
Can't believe there's a chat room big enough to hold all of our present bodies. Wow.
Of all the things I missed about the show, I miss Tony being wrong always.
We've already got a me. We don't need another me.
Oh boy, a Bashir episode.
Ah yes, Derek. Lover of lobster women, defender of Starfire's fidelity.
I just want to know, who is the consultant? Who could he be?
No! I have no heart!
Nobody can relate to a talking cat that eats lasagna.
I'll do it, but I want to be immediately killed afterwards.
Derek, in your Derek lair, do you have a list of that tells you like how to take down the other fan holes? Should we like go crazy?
How does my stupid voice sound?
You sound beautiful.
Like 10 times sexier. Good job.
No one gets us because we don't explain it.
Hey guys, welcome back to another Hockey Mask-erific machete-tastic episode of Fan Holes Podcast. Hey, what's up, guys? This is Derek, Derek WC. I'm going to be one of your hosts tonight, but I am not alone. I am joined by one of my fellow Camp Crystal Lake counselors. Why don't you give a shout out and let everybody know who's on the campgrounds tonight?
Hey, this is Justin.
Yeah, so we are here, as is our wont. I don't have any notes in front of me because I just got home, but we're talking about Friday the 13th, chapter 4, the final chapter. I probably even butchered the name. I don't even know if I said the name right. But this was intended to be the final installment of the franchise and was supposed to be the cap off of the franchise.
That always confused me as a kid because I kind of came to it a little after. And I had seen like part 6 and 7. And I was like, well, wait, 4 is the final chapter, but I know there are other movies because I've watched them. So what happened there? But like, you know, little kid me, like little 7-year-old me didn't realize that, you know, it was supposed to be the final chapter.
But right. I guess unlike you and I, if people were watching this series of films in real time, like they would have fallen for the marketing hype that this was the final chapter or whatever. So yeah, I have it in front of me. It's Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Like they don't even call it Friday the 13th part 4. It's just Friday the 13th, the final chapter. And it was directed by Joseph Zito. And the IMDb synopsis is, after being announced dead and taken to a morgue, Jason Voorhees spontaneously revives, shocker, escapes from the hospital, shocker, and stalks a group of friends renting a house in the countryside near Crystal Lake, super shocker. This doesn't, you know, it's funny. This is, you know, it's a fine synopsis in and of itself, but this kind of, it seems like it overlooks, like, okay, a group of friends, but like the friends come in and rent a house next to the actual like protagonists, which is like a family where it's a mother, a young daughter who's of the age of those teen friends that are renting the house. And then, you know, ostensibly not only the protagonist of this movie, but like maybe the possible successor to the franchise, which is, you know, a little kid named Tommy Jarvis, right? Like, so the synopsis does kind of, you know, give the actual main character short shrift, I guess. I had sort of forgotten that this opened with cuts from like every single like movie, the first three movies up to this point. You know, that it was like a television series recap of the first three movies when the before the opening credits start rolling, and I had sort of forgotten that they did that, and then they credit all those people at the end, like, oh, with special appearances by like everyone who is in the first three movies, because we can do that shit or whatever. And then I think the other thing that struck me, like when the film actually opens up, like I felt like, I don't know if you ever watched like Bobby Skullface videos, but like every once in a while he plays this one clip where it's like, Flex! and it's like all these horns are honking or whatever, you know, it's supposed to be like, you know, you're flexing like you're badass or whatever. And like, I feel like the opening to this movie is like, because it's like they had a budget finally, because there were like helicopters and fucking 20 police cars and 60 ambulance. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, a lot of ambulances, a lot of police cars, like, and they're all like in this almost like, it's funny, like, you know how they talk about like how Red Letter Media is always talking about how, like, you know, because Lucas filmed on a green screen and there's no sense of urgency, like everybody's kind of nonchalantly walking from room to room and there's no urgency. And then, you know, then you show a clip of the Abrams films where, like, you know, Kirk and everybody's like racing through the iPhone, Apple, Star Trek halls or whatever. And you're like, oh, you see what he's saying. You get this sense of urgency. And like, it's funny to me, like everyone in that like barn is dead, right? Including Jason, supposedly. But yet there's this like weird atmosphere of urgency where like dudes are in like raincoats and they're like rushing into the barn. Like it's this, like what's going to happen? Are all the bodies going to like melt and disappear if they don't get to them fast enough? Like, it's kind of funny to me that like everybody's like running around. Like it's like, it's a crime scene, but it almost looks like it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like it's a crime scene in the middle of Washington, D.C., but it's not in Washington, D.C. or something. I don't know. What would do you do you have any thoughts on the like that take on the opening, that like there's all these people like running around, and that either that or the fact that it's like this big flex for them to show like, oh, look at our budget. We've got like all these cars and squad cars, you know, kind of going back to like our Kakaida talks and stuff.
The budget flex isn't something I ever really was cognizant of until, like, I don't know. Like when you start to get older and you learn more and more about how movies are made and budgets and stuff, it's like, it's kind of like what I was saying. It's like when you're a little kid, you don't understand that, like, money talks, the final chapter doesn't mean the final chapter. So when you're a little kid, you don't really understand, like, oh, it costs money to like have a helicopter in the air, like an actual helicopter, not just a prop or something. So like that aspect of it isn't something I was aware of until, like, I don't know, early 2000s maybe, when I kind of like understood the movie making process more. The sense of urgency is there. What I find interesting is when everyone packs up and goes home, and it's like the final car light fades into the darkness and the helicopter's gone, and you have this shot where it's like you can just kind of like barely see the trees in the barn, and it's dark and it's silent. And it's like, it's really weird because you know that just, I don't know, maybe a couple hours earlier, like, not only was this place full of activity to get the bodies out of there, but it was like the site of a mass murder. I mean, and now it's like completely quiet, like, you know, as silent as the grave, I guess you could say. But it's like, I don't know if it's intentional, but it's like, it just kind of, the shot just kind of lingers there in the dark and in the quiet for a little bit. And I was like, oh, I wonder, I don't know. It's one of those things, like, you kind of like, maybe you overanalyze a little too much. I don't know. It's kind of like, well, we were talking about,
that's what we're here for, though, right? Like, to,
I guess,
to explore
but
that stuff, right?
It's kind of like, you know, we were talking about Ninja Turtles a while back, and Eastman and Laird, they were on the YouTube show Cartoonist Kayfabe.
Oh, the Kayfabe, yeah.
Yeah, and those guys were massive fans, you know. They were making indie comics, and they were like, oh, I really like this panel where you guys, like, did this, and the shadow, and you set this up, and this is so great. And Eastman and Laird pretty much said for like this whole like hour interview, because they were both there, they were like, you know, people always say like, oh, you guys are so masterful and you did this and you set up and blah, blah, blah. And they're just like, you know, it was just a happy accident. Like, we were just trying to crank out to like this one comic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what you say is like a masterful stroke and all this stuff. Like, we were just trying to like get this comic, you know, done and to do a good job and get it out the door. Like, they weren't thinking about like setting stuff up and like framing a shot,
or
and
that
like
somebody,
all this symbolism.
Somebody would be analyzing it, yeah, you know, 40 years later or whatever it is, right? Like,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
So me like analyzing that little shot, it's like the crime scene after the activity is over and it's quiet and dark. Like, that's probably me just overanalyzing it, but I kind of like, I don't know. It's like Red Letter Media says sometimes, it's like, if it's on screen, it's like, maybe, you know, there was some thought put into it. Maybe it wasn't all just happenstance, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then there's also that argument about, you know, I mean, it's what you get out of it, right? Like mm-hmm. It's what it means to you. And if it has that impact on you, it doesn't matter if like somebody else thinks this is like a junk movie, but you think there's this like pivotal quiet moment, you know, that just makes you reflect on, you know, because to me it's like when you started talking about that, it makes me think of like, not only was there this fury of activity because of the squad cars and the helicopters and the ambulances, but if you go back even further, there was activity because there were human beings there that were alive, or gang guys that were trying to steal gas, or, you know, whatever was going on in that last movie, right? Like Shelley and all those other fucking idiots, right? Like, so it's like that's also a part of it, like that it's like, it's finally quiet again, and you're like, oh shit, like all those goofy kids from the last movie, they're all carted up and being taken to the morgue too. But then to me, I go into this weird over analyzation, because it's like when that ambulance pulls up, and it's like the one guy, it's like the girl and the guy, or, you know, the girl's driving the ambulance, and then the more senior guy is like riding shotgun. And so he's talking to the cop. He's like, hey, what happened? And blah, blah, blah. Oh, there's a bunch of bodies in there. You gotta drive over there. And then the guy riding shotgun turns to the girl's like, oh, we gotta drive over there. And I'm like, what is she, fucking deaf? Like, she couldn't hear the guy. Like, I'm like, they're both in the, I mean, you know, they're in the same vicinity. It's not like she couldn't hear what the dude was saying or whatever. So it cracks me up. Like, some of that stuff, it just seems like it's like one of those things where it's like, perhaps it's cinematic, but it's also kind of like stupid, you know? Like, it doesn't take into account like, oh wait, she's right fucking there, like I'm sure she heard too or whatever. So that always kind of, I don't know, like that's what struck me too when I was watching that moment. And then I guess the other thing is, then after that quiet moment, it's like you immediately cut to the hospital, and I'm like, is this, because this is post Halloween 2, so I feel like, is that like another stolen blueprint? You know how, like, you know, Michael Myers is like the blueprint essentially for all of these slasher movies. So then they see Halloween 2, and Halloween 2 is like, you know, the next day, and it's stuck in a hospital, and everybody's stuck in the hospital. So the killer's in the hospital, and all this, you know, there's kinky sex that happens in the hospital, and everybody's got to be chased down in the hospital. And it, you know, the entire film for the final chapter does not take place in this hospital, but for enough of it, there's moments where it's, you know, that's where they decide to send Jason. It's where Jason spontaneously comes back to life, as the IMDb synopsis says. But what kind of, like, and maybe I'm dumb too, because maybe I don't know enough about this. I mean, yes, you know, there are dead bodies at a hospital, right? People die at hospitals, right? But like, why are they bringing a bunch of dead bodies to a hospital? Like, do they have to get autopsied? Like, do each of them, like, I don't know. I was just trying to figure out, like, are they trying to figure out the cause of death? Because I think the cause of death is Jason fucking hacked the motherfucker. You know, like, I don't know. Like, there's something about that whole thing that it's like, you're not supposed to think about it, but when you stop and think about it, it's like, if they're dead, don't they just, like, take them to either get buried or take them to get cremated? Like, why are they even in this fucking hospital? They're not going to bring them back to life, right? Like, I don't know. So that was something that was, I don't know if I'm just being, if I'm just shooting my mouth off without knowing many details about why dead bodies would get delivered to a hospital. But it seems like a weird stop, unless it was supposed to be specifically like, oh, these are going to be autopsied. But then aren't there like criminal or, you know, like police morgues or, you know, whatever, like there must be some, you know, forensic scientists that actually, like, why is the dude who's eating donuts and trying to get with the nurse in the middle of the night. Like, why is this the guy that's going to be taking care of the bodies? Like, I don't know. It's like funny. It's just because they're disposable because Jason's going to kill them. Like, I get it. Like, I'm not supposed to think about this too much. But like, you know, those were some of the things that were on my brain. Or like the fact that like the one driver lady thinks the guy's a slime ball, and even the older experienced senior guy thinks he's like, oh, real nice, because he's talking about, you know, maybe, you know, it's like, oh, some of these girls were cute, and it's like, they're dead, you know, like, and he's like, well, they're still cute, and you're just like, okay, slime ball, you're a slime ball. But then they immediately pivot to he's going to get with this hot nurse because they have to have like somewhat of a sex scene to keep the, you know, I guess the tropes of this genre going. It's like, he's a slime ball, but yet it's like she hates his guts, but she's into him. It's like, it's like all the wrong messages to tell young guys or something, right? It's like one day you too will get lucky with this hot nurse, even if you're a scumbag, because they'll somehow like you anyway for 5 minutes or whatever. And then it's like she comes in and gets, I don't know, it's a funny sequence, and it's probably, like you said, it's not worth over analyzing, but I mean, it's probably there for, you know, it's like, oh, this is titillation before the spontaneous resurrection of Jason, right? Like that, and that's all there really is to it. And you shouldn't think too much about why she's into this guy 1 minute and not into this guy the next minute. It's just part of this short scene in the hospital to establish that, you know, Jason's alive again and he's ready to start killing people. And then of course this goes back to my whole like, well, Freddy has a purpose and Jason just kills fucking people. It's like, they're not camp counselors, they're not from Crystal Lake, they didn't help him drown, but since they're in his way, or since they're in his vicinity when he spontaneously awakes, it's like they are fodder for the mill. So, you know, so I don't know. Any thoughts on scummy guy trying to get some in the morgue?
The thing that I always wondered is like, how did Jason just leave the hospital? Because it's like, I can't picture him like riding the elevator while there's music playing,
being stealthy, like stealthy, you know, Jason. Yeah,
can you just imagine like Jason like in his mask and everything just walking down the hall, pushing the elevator button and riding the elevator and then just leaving? It's one of those things you can't really imagine or see in the movie. It's like, can you imagine Jason like, I don't know, drinking a milkshake through his mask or something? You just kind of like try to picture it and you're like, no. Or it's like, can you imagine Jason like sitting down and petting a dog and not killing it? No. I don't know, it's one of those things, you know, again, you probably you're overthinking.
I guess if you want to throw out the no prize, right, it does seem like this nurse and that morgue guy are stuck on the grave shift. Like, that's why they're able to have these after hours trysts, right, without anybody interrupting them, or why they're even willing to consider it. Like, if this was during a day shift, like this would be really low brow per se, right? But since it's the grave shift, it's like they don't think they're going to get caught doing this, right? And then presumably if there's not a bunch of people around to see them have this little tryst, then potentially after those two get killed, maybe they're the only two, like, even though there were all these massive hospital ambulances and everything, maybe senior guy and the lady who was driving the ambulance, who couldn't overhear the conversation that was going on right next to her or whatever, like, maybe their shift is done and they go home, or they go back to drop off the ambulance or whatever it is. And it's like, if it's only that nurse and morgue man, you know, like once they're dead, maybe there's no one else for Jason to run into that is going to like alert people to his presence or freak out or, you know, whatever.
After the hospital scene, like, the movie slows down quite a bit, but I think I think of these early movies, like, this one does, like, maybe the best job of setting up your characters to try and make you care about them, because I think it does a good job of setting up the Jarvis family and the kids who are, like, ruining the house next door. I mean, it's like, you get quite a bit of time until the next kill, but, like, I don't think, I mean, I've watched this movie, I don't want to say hundreds of times, but I've watched it a lot. It's one of my favorites of the series, but I've never felt bored watching these characters. Like, some of these movies, I'm just like, okay, get on with it and kill these fucks. But, like, I like the Jarvis family, and I like most of these kids that are renting the house, like, especially Crispin Glover and Teddy. Like, I think those are the two standout ones. Like, the one guy who gets killed singing in the shower, like, he probably has, like, the least character development or anything. It's like he's just kind of there with the I don't know, like the virgin girl or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I guess him singing in the shower is like his moment, because like after that he's just kind of like in the background with that chick or driving the car or whatever. But
I think that I'm kind of in agreement with you on this. Like I don't know that it was by my own design, but I feel like this Friday the 13th film is probably the one I've watched the most. And I think the reason for that was I feel like it was in like constant syndicated play.
Yeah.
Like my recollection is one of our local stations, I think TV 44 would play this like a bunch. And by the time I was in that phase where I was always going to the video store and renting horror films, and yeah, primarily they'd be Freddy, but you know, I'd get curious about other things. You know, I'd try, but what's this Bad Taste? Like what's, you know, what are these Friday the 13th movies, or what are, you know, what's this, you know, a sequel to Hellraiser or whatever, you know, whatever it was. And I'd rent these different things. What's Slave Girls from Beyond Infinity? You know, I'd rent all this shit, whether it caught my interest because it was titillating or because I thought, oh, this looks like a cool horror franchise and maybe there'll be some titties in it. Like, that's basically where my head was at when I was renting all these things. But this was one of those things where it played on TV so much, I felt like I watched it a bunch. And then the other thing that's interesting to me is, like, I feel like I watched an edited version of this so much that some of the potential nudity, like when they go skinny dipping or you know they like you said, they're in the shower and different things like that, there's that potential for, you know, and they curse and all that stuff. I'm sure that was at least toned down or edited or something, you know, when it was on, you know, network syndicated television. Like, I can't remember what they dubbed it with, but I'm 100% sure when I was watching this repeatedly, they did not have the dead fuck scene. Like, maybe it was like, you're a dead lay or something. You know what I mean? Like it's like they changed it to something else so that it was not, you know, it's like, who's the dead lay now, you know, or, you know, whatever, you know, they changed it to later on in the, you know, the you know,
hey,
the film, you know.
Let me ask you something real quick. Who is a better, like, awkward dancer, Crispin Glover or David Boreanaz?
I mean, I love that David Boreanaz scene. I know. Like I think the reason why the Crispin Glover thing is endearing to people is he never has the Boreanaz moment of like, no, I can't do this. Like Boreanaz, it's just his imagination. He's like, I could, you know, it's this moment of consideration where he's like, yeah, I could rock out. I could do this. I could. And he thinks about it and he imagines it happening and then realizes how fucking stupid he would look doing it.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, no, never mind. Forget it. Whereas Crispin Glover is an actor, and then they told him to dance, and uh-huh, he's such a unique, I mean, that's what everybody talks about in this, right? He's such a unique
uh-huh
personality. And so there's no way he's not going to do anything tame or anything like milk toast or, yeah, or whatever. Like, it's always going to be something where, I mean, that's the funny thing was you see him and it's like, you say like all these characters are fairly likable. Like you almost feel kind of like sad when some of them like meet their end, because most of them are I feel like pretty nice people. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think maybe Teddy is the exception, right? Or the way that what's her face, the one of the Doublemint twins, the shitty one that tries to like steal the guy from the other girl and kind of dumps Teddy for the guy she's into and all that other stuff. Like they're not, you know, they're not the nicest of people at moments, but I mean, I get what you're saying. Like you feel sympathy when they get, you know, rejected at different points. You know, they're just all young people trying to, you know, have fun or whatever. And I think, especially in hindsight, like being, I don't know, for me, being the age I am now, it's like, you know, you realize all that high school bullshit is just irrelevant high school bullshit. It doesn't really mean anything. So, you know, to me, it's like, I guess maybe this is me just having a lot of forgiveness for people that are either mean or people that go through some tough shit. It's like, well, we all go through the tough shit and everybody has to deal with, you know, meanie heads in their lives or whatever it is, right? Like, so there's that aspect to it. And then I guess, you know, like we're talking about, you know, the IMDb synopsis undersells the Jarvis family, right? Like, I mean, they are you know, I mean, I guess, like, I mean, if you want to super analyze it, right? Like, I'm sure Mike on Red Letter Media probably already said this, and I'm just regurgitating something he said, but it's like one of those things where you're like, ah, look, it's a family unit, but there's no father. You know what I mean? There's no male presence. Like, so it's like, what, did the mom get divorced? Like, is she a divorcee? And then they're just living out here in the woods and whatever and making do. Like, you know, they don't really go into that. They don't even really have any, from my recollection, I mean, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't even have any expository dialogue about that. It just, it is like, she's the mom and then it's the daughter and little Tommy, and they don't say much about it, but you can see like Tommy's, like when the dude that's hitchhiking that helps them like fix their car and everything and comes hangs out with them and becomes sort of like this he's almost like one of the Doctor Who companions that is the one that does all the fighting. Do you know what I mean? Once he shows up on the scene, it's like you can see that Tommy Jarvis is like thirsty for a strong male, you know, role model or big brother or, you know, whatever you want to refer to that guy as, like that he's super thirsty for it. Like he's ready. He's like, dude, you fixed our car. You, my sister probably thinks you're cute and you can make her happy and come upstairs and see all my cool shit. And then, you know, I guess the obvious thing too is, and this is probably, been talked about to death, but it's like, you've got, Tom Savini, right, doing all the special effects, and the idea that Tommy Jarvis, at least little Tommy Jarvis, is supposed to be this you know, write in, you know, self insert character, you know, like the way King Mob is for Grant Morrison and in Invisibles. It's like Tommy Jarvis is really supposed to be a young Tom Savini showing off all his creature, as you know, special effects bullshit that he would go on to become famous for in movies like these. But it's like, oh, look, this is like a snapshot of what his life was like. So who knows? Maybe I didn't do any research on it. I don't even know if it's online, but who knows? Maybe Tom Savini came from a divorced family, so maybe that's why this is the way it is. Like, I have no idea, but
there is a little bit of dialogue when Tommy's sister is talking to dude and she says that her parents are separated.
Oh, okay. 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 Sure enough. So maybe it's text instead of subtext. Yeah.
Yeah.
What, speaking of, titties and stuff that's like edited for broadcast, like, you know what I always thought was funny was like, it's like the way Corey Feldman reacts to,
oh yeah,
seeing you know, he's checking out the guy and the one, I guess the girl who gets around or whatever, you know, of the group of friends. And it's like the first thing they do is she takes her top off and they start, you know, making out or whatever. And the windows open so he can see everything. And it's like, there's that part of me that's like, oh yeah, I was that age once, and I'm fucking 47. And if I saw that, I still might take a peep and be like, oh yeah, that looks pretty hot. But I would not jump around on my bed like it was a fucking beanbag or some shit or a bouncy thing at Chuck E. Cheese or whatever. Like that, I don't understand. It's like you're so excited you want to like bounce up and down on your bed like that. It seems like two different excitements to me. Like the bouncing up and down on your bed seems like something very childish, but it's like, I guess they were trying to figure out a way to communicate that to an audience without having, you know, Corey Feldman whip it out right then and there or something. Like, so I don't know, but you know, and then it's funny too, because the mom, like, it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, you like, and it's like, okay, I mean, I guess I get it, right? Like, but it's a funny little sequence.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's strangely endearing or something.
It feels
like something from like a bygone era or something.
Well, and it feels real or honest.
Yeah,
it, like they're not like, look, dude's a young kid, but like, you know, and later, you know, when he sees them all skinny dipping, it's the same thing, right? It's like, oh, well, this is. You know, I haven't gotten a chance to see this. And it's like the funny part about it, too, is right. Like, I mean, if he's the protagonist and he's even an audience identification character, like, well, why are all these people paying money for tickets to see these Friday the 13th movies in the first place? It's to see this stuff. It's to see this stuff and do the Corey Feldman thing and bang your head against the fucking bed sheets for whatever good that does you, but you know, or roll around like an idiot, you know, like, but the point is you go for that, you know, the titillation, the kills, the whatever, right? Like that's why you're going to see this. So in some ways you are, you know, you're simpatico with Tommy Jarvis one way or the other.
Yeah, it's not like he sees it and immediately turns his back and he goes, oh no, I do not have consent, I must not look, and leaves the room or something.
Right.
Which is probably what happened in a modern movie.
I do not consent. Well, I mean, that's what the mom's for, though, right? I mean,
yeah.
And then what's funny, too, though, is like, and it's not like she doesn't, like, you know, claw his eyes out because he was looking at it. She doesn't, you know, smack him over the head or anything. She actually just goes along with the gag. He pretends he's sleeping. She pretends she thinks he's sleeping. And then she, you know, she loves him. She, you know, covers him up with the sheets and kisses him, you know, good night. And then at that point she closes the blinds, right? Cause that's, you know, okay. Like that's the extent of it, I guess. Oh, and then here, I'm going to keep dining on this or whatever, but I'm pretty sure a lot of this was shot in the same place that we shot that summer camp massacre shit. So like when they're walking and they meet the Doublemint twins, like that location, like, is the same, like, I don't know, canyon, mountain, whatever the fuck, you know what I mean? Like, it's that same area where they were having us shoot scenes for that movie as well. Because if you look, like, if you watch one of those movies, I don't think I was in this sequence, but if you watch one of those movies, like, there's clearly a moment where they're filming in this same, like, where they meet the Doublemint twins on that path. Like, it's just, I don't know if they, probably knowing Dave, he probably did it on purpose, but like that is the same location for sure.
Something that always kind of bugged me was Tommy's mom just kind of disappears. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
I mean, was this something that they lost track of, or did they film a sequence of her death and it just, for whatever reason, it got cut or ran out of money, or do you know anything about this? I mean, I know you probably didn't do a whole lot of research on this movie.
Yeah, I didn't research shit about this movie. I mean, that sounds reasonable. Like, maybe there was a death scene and it got cut, but that would all be speculation and supposition for me. It's interesting, too, because even at the end, right? It's only the sister in the hospital, right? And then then Tommy comes and hugs her, and it's the, you know, what the hell happened to him at the ending, you know, type thing. Like, was he possessed by the fucking spirit of Jason or what, you know, whatever people were fucking speculating about or whatever. But yeah, you're right. Like, she does disappear. So you don't know if she got killed or what happened. Right.
And then, because I'm a, you know, I'm an animal person. It's like the shot of the dog Gordon jumping out the window and crashing through the glass, I always thought was bizarre. Like, okay, I guess he's so scared he's running away from Jason. But then I'm like, well, did he die? I mean, like, what happened to the dog? Like, I that's one of those things. I'm like, did he die? Is he okay? Like, is he still, like, I don't know, did someone find him later and bring him back to Tommy or what? I don't know.
I mean, I don't have a definitive answer for the fictional dog, but I mean, I feel like the real dog, the real Gordon, the person playing Gordon, I feel like he's fine. But I feel like it's kind of inconclusive because I can tell he's fine when he's jumping through the glass. Like, so maybe he's a shitty actor because I don't know if Gordon's supposed to be dead or not. Like, so I don't know. But like, that's I mean, I guess, I don't know. It's weird. It's like one of those things where it's like, is that like, you know, is that like me being obstinate that like only one Ewok died during the Battle of Endor? It's like, is it the fact that you never see Gordon or the mother again? Does that confirm they die or does that make it ambiguous? I feel like that makes it ambiguous because you don't have like the one scene where the Ewok like nudges the other Ewok and you realize, oh, like to me, that's my rationalization for the Return of the Jedi. All the other Ewoks you think are dead were all playing dead. But the one he nudges, he's like, come on, bro, we were all playing dead. Let's get up and get out of here. And the one he nudges that doesn't wake up, he goes, oh, shit, you ain't playing. You're really dead. That's the one Ewok that died in the Battle of Endor, right? Because it's the one on, you know, the one confirmed kill, right? Because you see it happen, right? Whereas there are so many confirmed kills in this movie, like the fact that the dog and the mom were never officially confirmed, like that to me makes it ambiguous, right? Like not definitive. Or like you said, maybe for the mom, maybe there was a cut scene or something.
So we haven't talked about this, but like, do you remember the first time you watched this? Because I don't know if it was on, you know, USA or TNT.
I think it was TV44. I think it was like syndicated. Like, I know there weren't all the boobies and titties and cursing. Like, I knew it was like, I'm almost positive. I mean, maybe I'll have to look it up if anybody bothers to keep, you know, video of heavily edited movies, but I'm almost positive instead of saying dead fuck, they said dead lay. Like, you laid her or what, you know what I mean? Like, you're a dead lay. So, I mean, that's my memory of it at any rate. And I feel like it constantly played a lot. And I don't know if I ever went out of my way to rent this because it was on TV so much. That's why I feel like I'm assuming what I'm watching on these double disc or double film disc, you know, Paramount DVDs that I still haven't upgraded, like that's what I ended up watching this on. And I mean, I assume it's the, you know, the theatrical, you know, uncut or, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, not heavily edited for TV version. And I'm kind of like, well, I mean, it's mostly what I remember, with, like I said, some exceptions where I'm like, oh, I don't remember that much titties, probably because I never used to see them. And then the you know, major cursing, like dead fuck type thing, right? Like that's kind of what I was, I guess, dwelling back on or whatever. So and again, this is, whereas like some of these I can tell you for sure, like, you know, and even though it's sort of retroactive, but I can tell you, oh, I watched the theatrical screening of, you know, Friday the 13th 3, right? Like, or 3D or whatever, right? Like, I can tell you that. But this I've never seen theatrically. It was not on my radar when it came out. I don't even think most of these movies were on my radar, even when I was heavily into Freddy. That's why I think it was just like, oh yeah, it's on TV, I guess I'll watch it, you know, like, fine. Like, it wasn't like, but I think like what you're saying is true though. They were, I mean, this was to me fairly compelling, because I think you had that identification character. I mean, it might not have been, I might not have been special effects wizard or a monster makeup kid or whatever, but I mean, I do remember just being excited, you know, oh, I'm going to show off my Star Wars collection or my whatever collection to my dad, to a big brother type character or something like that. Like, you're going to think this is cool, right? Like, and I guess, you know, sometimes I'm like, this is, I wish Tony was here, because like I could identify some things in his room, but I couldn't identify everything. Like, I saw Ram Man on his shelf, and I saw I'd have to look up what it's called, but I saw a vehicle from the Power Lords line. I think it was that guy with like 500 fucking arms and hands or whatever, but I don't remember his name. I have to maybe let me see. Power Lords. Ah, here it is. The Power Ship. Aha. Power Lords, Power Ship. So like I definitely saw the Power Lords Power Ship, and I definitely saw Ram Man. I don't know. Did you see anything on Tommy Jarvis's shelves as far as like 80s toys that stood out to you?
No, I couldn't identify any of that stuff.
Oh, okay. Because I did see some stuff. There was some stuff on there that I didn't know if it was generic or from a toy line, like, but I couldn't recognize it. It was like it looked like little Griffiths or something like that, but I didn't recognize that as being from a toy line. Do you know what I'm talking about, this Power Lordship thing?
No.
Here, let me show you, because I just found a picture of it, so it's worth at least worth you going, I've never seen that before in my life, or you can go, oh, I remember that. I mean, Power Lords, they were kind of He-Man scale, like, so it kind of makes sense that he had those and Ram Man or whatever.
But I've never seen that before in my life.
Oh, okay. Well, he definitely had that on his shelf, and I own that at some point. Like, I didn't have all the Power Lords, but I had, I'd say a fair number of them. You know, it was like Adam Power. He swapped around. That figure broke almost immediately because it was so intricate the way it did the swap thing, like where it's like he was like a human dude with like an orange jumpsuit, but then you like flipped him around and it was supposed to be like you saw like his I don't know, not like his it was like he was one of those anatomy models, like, you know how you like you see people's veins and shit like that in like a anatomy model. Like, I think that's what it was supposed to be. And he had like this third eye and it was supposed to be all like alien and Zen and shit like that. But anyway, this was Adam Power's fucking Batmobile, the Power Lord ship or whatever. And the hood opened up and I think there were like some guns or some shit in there or whatever. So, and you could put his little girlfriend in the sidecar shotgun or whatever. So anyway, but, it doesn't surprise me that those were the toys of the day and that I recognize those. But to give you that as a frame of reference, like, that's probably what I was into. I was probably into Power Lords more than I was into Friday the 13th when this movie came out. So I certainly didn't see it theatrically. But I think, you know, when I was a teenager and I was getting into all the Freddy movies, that's when I explored, you know, more horror films and sometimes rented them or watched whatever was on TV. And this was definitely one of them.
Dinosaurs, purple skies, motorcycles, the hero who cries. All on covers of comic books that sell the best. But what sells more than the rest? Monkeys, covers with monkeys. Yes, you know you gotta stock the monkeys. Hey, hey, stock the monkeys. Hey, hey.
Celebrating the tradition of apes in comics, for 2024, Gorilla Grodd has transformed JL May into JL April. Honestly, he does that a lot. Exploring a phylum of amazing apes, such as
Batman Annual number 23,
Wonder Woman number 170,
Kong on the Planet of the Apes, issue 1,
Angel and the Ape,
The Helmet of Fate, Detective Chimp,
Showcase number 77,
JLA versus Godzilla versus Kong,
Swamp Thing volume 2, annual 3,
Kong Gorilla issues 1 through 4,
with a host of podcast all-stars like
The Bat Pod,
Resurrections, an Adam Warlock and Thanos podcast,
Outcasters, a Batman and the Outsiders podcast,
Dolly for Flanger,
The Quarter Bin podcast,
Coffee and Comic,
Once Upon a Geek,
Fan Holes podcast,
Married with Content with John and Maggie,
Campus Comics cast,
and many more. Look for the hashtag JLApril2024 on social media, the podcast crossover event that doesn't monkey around.
JL April.
Really? Monkey around? This is what you're giving me? I don't know why I agreed to this.
Stick to the script, monkey boy!
What do you think about the relationship between, what is it, like, Teddy and Crispin Glover? I can't think of his character's name.
They're just like two dude bros kind of like riffing on each other. Like, I know you, I think earlier you said like he may be kind of like, what, like maybe like the least screen friendly character or something, but I mean he's just like busting his balls is all it is.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
he's not a bad guy, I don't think.
I don't think he's a bad guy, but I just think it's funny that like he in some ways he gets his just desserts before he gets killed, like where it's like, oh, you thought you were cool.
Yeah, he talked a bunch of shit.
You know,
and he gets
talked
girls.
A bunch of shit, but yeah. Then you get, you think you're hot shit, but none of the girls were actually into you. And then what's funny is, I thought it was funny that the one, it's like when the, it's funny to say because they're twins, right? But when the hot doublemint twin goes after the one guy, and then that guy reconsiders, right? And then effectively rejects her. Then she goes after Crispin Glover, even though Crispin Glover was supposed to hook up with the other double mint twin. And he's just, okay, I'll just go with the ride, right? Like, she's into me. She it's like, I may be her sloppy seconds, but it's going to be fun. So let's go upstairs and have a good time type thing. Right. And then it also seems like that hotter doublemint twin has some kind of schadenfreude, like, because it's like she seems to get off on the fact that Teddy is miserable when she's slow dancing with the one guy. And then when she goes upstairs with Crispin Glover, like, it's almost like that's part of the turn on for her or something, like that she gets off on that. And then Teddy's left with the other double mint twin who looks like she might like just say, I guess you're the only guy left, so let's hook up. But then it's like, not quite, like it just sort of, it's like she sits next to him, but then it kind of falls apart like fairly quickly. So it's like, oh, okay. And then the next time you see him, he's just there like high as a kite, like watching the, you know, whatever naked films, or you know what I mean, like just doing whatever, like, so it's kind of like, oh well, clearly that didn't work out, like the way the pairings finally ended up for Teddy and that the secondary double mint twin or whatever.
I kind of always got the feeling like this is not the first time the double mint twins have pulled this, because like the other, she's kind of like, you know, she does like the walking finger, she's like, let's go, let's beat it, and she's like, no, you leave, like you kind of, and she goes upstairs looking for her. Like, I don't know. I just kind of got the feeling like this is not the first
this
time.
This is not the happened. First time she's pulled this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That tracks. I mean, maybe they just have a pattern. Maybe in addition to getting off on, you know, Teddy being jealous the whole time she she pulls this shit. Like, maybe part of it too is that she's like, oh, even though we're twins, I get all the guys. Like, yeah. and you get left with like the dreck or whatever, you know, type thing. And that's also something that I guess floats her boat for whatever reason. And I mean, that's kind of going back to like when you watch these movies and the people are kind of nasty and you feel like they deserve to get like hacked by Jason. Like there's a little, I mean, I feel like this movie has the bare minimum of it. Cause I kind of feel bad for like, even, you know, I know he's not like the greatest dude bro in the world, but like the dude singing in the shower when he finally lays what's her face, the virgin, like, I kind of feel bad for them when they get fucking creamed. I kind of even feel bad for the chick, the so-called loose chick that like gets rejected and goes off to like, you know, pout in the lifeboat. Like a lot of those, or even Crispin Glover, like, I mean, because he's like desperately concerned. Like, I guess every dude would be like, am I a fucking dead fuck? And when Doubleman Twin, you know, the hot one says like, oh, no, you're not. Then he's like, oh, thank God. And then he gets into snogging her again. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's, I don't know. Like, see, that's the thing that like, if Teddy was a good dude, bro, then I guess he would comprehend that him saying that to Crispin Glover would have messed with him too much or whatever, you know, like that it's like the computer's you, dude, like, you know, like this is like, oh, it's just the computer, you know, like type thing or whatever. But I don't know. Anyway, I mean, you know, like we're saying, like most of these characters are okay, you know, like I do kind of feel bad for most of them when they get fragged, which is, I feel like that's unique among Friday the 13th movies, isn't it? Like, or am I wrong?
I mean, compare the cast of this movie to the next one, A New Beginning. Like, I feel like a lot of the characters in the next movie are pretty unlikable, and maybe that's a result of them being in that that home. Like, it's like a reformat. What is that? It's not exactly it's not exactly an asylum. It's like a place for like wayward teens, but most of them are like kind of off or shitty people. It's like, you kind of don't care if the majority of them get off. But like, I mean, okay, the first three movies, I mean, we've had some, you know, shitty characters. You're just like, okay, like the gang people from the previous movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, you don't care because they're there to like fuck with them, or, you know, they're going to mess up like the dude who was pulling the pranks. You're like, okay, I don't want, he's annoying, but he doesn't deserve to die. So you don't want the gang people to fuck him up.
Right, right.
But yeah, this one, like I said, I think it has like the least offensive people. It's like even the Doublemint girl, who's kind of like the hot one, and she's being kind of shitty. It's like, okay, she's shitty person, but she doesn't deserve to die.
But she doesn't deserve to die. And the other thing is, well, at least she lays Crispin. I mean, you could argue she's his angel, right? Because he was the guy getting told he was a dead fuck, and then by the end of it, I mean, that's when you feel bad for both. It's like, clearly she had a good time at least, and he was ecstatic about it. And then it's like, it's the more obvious thing. It's the antithesis of what we talked about when we watched H2O and we were expecting dude to get nailed with the corkscrew, or it wasn't a corkscrew, but like, remember when the dude was like searching in the garbage disposal, and we expected the garbage disposal to turn on and eat up his hand, whereas this one, it was like the obvious thing. It's like, where's the corkscrew? And then he fucking gets stabbed in the hand with the fucking corkscrew. Like, that's what we were expecting in the H2O thing to happen. And this movie does, I guess, you know, it does not subvert your expectations. It meets them, right? Like, and it plays to your expectations, I think.
The where the hell is the corkscrew? I don't know. That kind of always makes me laugh. And then
it does.
The death that makes me laugh because it's so silly is when you know, the dude who's out like in the woods, you know, trying to get revenge on Jason or whatever. It's like, he's in the basement, and like from the very first moment Jason like tries to cut him, he's like, he's killing me. I'm like, I don't know, just this. That seems absurd.
You know what? I didn't do any research on this either, but you know what that, like, what you, I guess, made me remember is that character, as much as he was supposed to be, like, the the heroic male Doctor Who companion that does all the fighting. There's also that aspect of he shows up in the middle of the woods. At one point, he finds the sister in a tent and has a machete himself. Mm-hmm. Like, there's that weird aspect where they're trying to also establish him simultaneously as a red herring. Like, he's the one killing everybody. Like, he's Jason and Jason's not Jason or some shit like that. And I'm just saying, I don't think this was the plan ever, but like, can you imagine like an alternate universe where this was like Scream and Jason was like hacking dude bro up and it's like, he's killing me. And then all of a sudden he starts laughing and is like he's actually in on it with Jason or some shit. You know what I mean? Like where he's like the, what are those two guys' names? Sid and what's her face? The girl, but like, you know what I'm talking about, those the guys from Scream or whatever. It's like Matthew Lillard and what's his nuts from fucking Riverdale or whatever. I can't think of his name. Skeet Ulrich, but I can't think of their characters' names. But like, you know how they were like, it was like a death pact pair thing or whatever. Like maybe he could have been the dude bro could have been the Matthew Lillard to Jason Skeet Ulrich or some shit. You know what I mean? Like he could have been in on it the whole time and also helping Jason kill people for whatever insane reason. You know, maybe his sister was drowned by camp counselors too or some shit, even though none of these people are fucking camp counselors. So again, this movie doesn't follow any fucking rules, Justin. Like it trips me out. Like Jason's just killing anybody indiscriminately. There's no camp counselors in this movie ever. I know it stopped being about camp counselors like fucking three movies back, but still. I'm like, where are all my camp counselors that deserve to be getting killed? I don't know where they are because they're not in this movie. What about sister getting thrown through the window being obviously a dude? How about that?
Yeah.
We could talk about that.
There's a lot of people getting like thrown through windows or Jason comes through the window and then the dog Gordon busts through the window. It's like there's a lot of people getting thrown through windows in this movie.
Yes. I think that's part of that, you know, there are five ambulances and four police cars, that it's a flex because they have all these candy glass, whatever, you know, stunt windows and stunt people. And they're like, look at what we can do. Like, look at the not only the budget we have with the ambulances and all this other shit, but look at the budget we can afford to pay these trained stuntmen guys to like throw themselves off, not only out a window, but off of from the second fucking floor onto the ground. Like that's one of those things where if I'm giving all the dude bros in Kakaida episodes like a high five for their stunt work, I guess I got to give this dude bro who dressed up like the sister in Little Tidy Whiteys that took a dive off of the fucking second floor through a window. Like I guess I got to give him props too, right?
Yeah, I mean that. We've talked about this before, like on Tokusatsu, but like those are the unsung heroes, like the stunt guy who has a slim frame who has to perform as like the Pink Ranger or whatever. And you're like, all right, you're the unsung hero, bro. It's like you got into that pink suit and you're doing like the girly pose or whatever you're doing. You got the body language down, but we still kind of in the back of our heads, we're like, that's a dude, even if we can't see it. But yeah, in this, it's, you know, we're like, okay. They probably got like the best body double they could to maybe match someone feminine, but you're like, okay, on Blu-ray or DVD, you can pause it.
Yeah. In this day and age, it's pretty obvious, but you know, maybe, you know, especially for me when it was on, you know, I saw this on a tiny little, you know, CRT TV, right? Like, so there's no way I would have noticed that back then, right? Like it would have all looked seamless to me, like fucking, you know, I mean, it's like when you watch old episodes of Star Trek and it's like, that's a totally different dude. His hair color isn't even the fucking same. And he's got like 20 pounds on William Shatner, but he's still doing the stunts for him or whatever, you know, like that kind of shit where you're like, what the fuck? Like it's not that crazy, you know, like, but or, you know, we can tell.
Yeah. And going back to Red Letter Media, it's like, okay, you can see on the high def Blu-ray on TNG where like the mark is on the carpet, but like on an old TV in 1989, like
you wouldn't have seen the mark. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, that's all super true.
It's the magic of movie making, Derek.
You got to believe the magic. You can't be an old miserable fuck like me when I go to Galaxy's Edge and go, I can't buy the magic of all this Rise of the Resistance bullshit because it's not my jam. You got to believe in the hype, I guess.
The imperfection is you.
If they made a Friday the 13th the last final chapter ride, maybe I could get into it. You know, could ride around and Jason could like choke people out at some point or whatever. You know,
that would be something.
It'll be like a Jack Sparrow animatronic of the Doubleman twins getting naked and flashing their titties. Like that would work, right? Like I'd go on that ride. That ride would be the fucking bomb, man. Like, wait. Here we go. I'm watching this to remind myself. So, as we're talking about it, I just have it on in the background. So I think this is the mom's last sequence. She comes in the house, and she's drying herself off because she's taking a jog. Gordon. She doesn't know where anybody is. She's drinking Trish. Water.
Yep.
And she's looking, and then. And then this is the last mom scene. Am I right?
I believe so, because she says, "Where am I?" Because she's asking, "Where is everyone?"
And okay. And she's looking up the stairs and asking where everybody is, and it's all dark. And then she pours the water out, and she's still talking to no one, like a dumb bitch. See, at this point, you would have expected Jason to come out and kill her by now, but you're saying that doesn't happen, right? They just forget about her and she disappears.
I don't know what happened. If I had had time, I would have watched the
six-hour Crystal Lake thing. Yeah, I forgot about doing that too. This is you know, peek behind the curtain, bros. Like this is it's not last minute. We had it planned, but I mean, I'm lucky that I even rewatched this movie by the time we were recording this. The way this week's been going, so. Then she walks out. She walks out in the rain, and she's looking for someone in the bushes or some shit. I don't know what she's doing. Hurry up, movie. Oh wait. Then she screams. So she screamed at something, presumably Jason. And then we never see her again. Because she at the end of that sequence, she walks outside and then she screams. And then maybe they lost track of her. Because now we're going into the, what's her face? Virgin girl going into the shower and shit. Or coming out of the shower. I don't know. Whatever it is.
The Wikipedia entry says, Mrs. Jarvis arrives home and discovers the power is out. While searching for her children and Gordon, she is killed off screen.
So that you were supposed to take away from that when she walked out there and she screamed that was Jason and she died, but they never showed you the kill shot for Mrs. Jarvis, probably because she was so endearing and you loved her so much that they didn't want to show you her gruesome death. Or perhaps what's her face, the actress, was like, I ain't putting on none of that candy fucking makeup shit, fuck you, and then they just did it that way.
You'd think they could have at least, you know, got a stunt double and showed her like dead body laying in the rain or something. Just for like one shot to be like, oh,
just to confirm, like that's, or you'd think like when the kids are running around at some point or whatever, like what's her face is like trying to save Tommy by leading Jason away, like she could stumble upon mom's body or something. But yeah, you're right. When what's his face when dude bro is like, he's killing me. It's almost like he's like stuck in place. Like it is kind of funny. Like that and Corkscrew are pretty funny moments. It's like I you know what it's like. It's like that wizard thing where they have that cover at JLA, and he's like, dude, why don't we just fly out of here, bro? Game over, man. Game over. It's like, dude, why don't you just fucking push Jason away? See that's why when fucking in H2O when what's his face, why can't I think of his name now, Josh Hartnett, like punches out fucking Michael Myers, and like, even though he stabbed in the leg, that's why in those moments I'm like, fuck yeah, because I wanted this guy to do that to Jason. Instead, he went, he's killing me, he's killing me. Oh. Like, I wanted him to do the Josh Hartnett thing and be like, okay, I'm stabbed, but I'm still gonna like punch you in the face and try to fight back just a little bit, you know.
You wanted the Friday the 13th equivalent of Trick or Treat, motherfucker?
Yes. I wanted Duke Rowe, Tommy Jarvis was thirsty for, to be like, Trick or Treat, motherfucker, and like do that like roundhouse kick shit. That would have been fucking bomb, dude. It's like, why you look all badass with that machete in the rain, but then when it comes time to put up, you can't even do like a roundhouse kick or anything. So so everyone's dead except for the sister and Tommy Jarvis, and maybe Gordon's okay.
Maybe
in Justin's world, for Justin's sake,
yes,
Gordon made it through, right? He jumped through the window. He might be a little broken up, but maybe he's fine, right? So at that point, much like what the protagonist in the second film that realizes she needs to like wear the Pamela Voorhees sweater and talk shit to Jason to confuse him and say that she's his mommy and shit. Like, Tommy Jarvis figures out like, oh, this is also Jason's weakness. Like, if I cut off all my hair, and I know he didn't really do this himself, but I'm going to give the fictional character Tommy Jarvis mad props, because he's not doing this with like an electric razor. Like, he's like snipping his hair with scissors, and then he's putting shaving cream on his fucking head, and then he's shaving his hair off of his fucking skull with a razor. Mad props, little Tommy Jarvis fictional character. Like, mad props for that, because that's not easy. Mad props. And so he comes down looking like, I guess, Jason Voorhees before the Crystal Lake accident, I suppose. And that does cause Jason to take pause. And then he sort of, I don't know. They do this thing where he comes after him, and then, you know, you know what else I was thinking of when I was watching this? Like, you know how they're doing the chase and the back and forth and all this stuff? And you know that sequence where Jason, I think he smashes through like the window and grabs Tommy, and then the sister takes a hammer and just keeps pounding the shit out of his fucking head with the hammer? Like, do you remember that sequence?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I guess I was just having a Mark Millar moment or some shit. Like, I was like, if I was Mark Millar and I was like rewriting this movie or writing my own version of Friday the 13th, like if that happened to somebody, or maybe this is like the Walking Dead version of it or something, like I for some reason it just occurred to me like, oh, what if like in her zeal to like smack the shit out of Jason's head, she ended up smacking Tommy once and killing him? Do you know what I mean? Like, what if you did something like that where it was like totally, and then all of a sudden she feels like a douchebag and lets Jason kill her or whatever. You know what I mean? Like something, I don't know. I just had one of those moments where, oh, that's something like Mark Millar would write or whatever. And I don't think it would work for this movie, but like I did have that thought this time when I was watching it.
Or she accidentally kills Tommy, and then Jason immediately is like, you ruined the fun, and he just leaves.
Yeah, he just goes home and leaves her there to like wallow in her misery or whatever. And then it has one of those dumb Friday the 13th endings where like she wakes up and is like, was it a dream? And it's like, no, you fucking killed your brother. Oh my God. Oh my God. Is Gordon okay? No, he ate your leg.
What if the fake out ending in this movie was like, you know, she's hugging Tommy in the hospital, and then the dog jumps in the window of the hospital and sits on the bed with them for the hug.
It's like, duh, duh, as the dog like fucking goes through the window and shit. But yeah, I mean, I imagine our thoughts are fairly similar. Like, I like this movie. I don't I'm trying to think, like, I like it. I know it's probably very well regarded among the franchise. I feel like in most cases, this would almost be a lot of people's number one in the franchise, but I don't know that I quite feel that strongly about it, only because I think I have more nostalgia for 3, which is why we ended up covering that before this. And then I think I have like stupid affection for like the ones I saw in the theater more, but that's, I mean, some of the ones I saw in the theater are terrible movies, right? Like, so, I mean, that's, that only has so much weight to it. You know what I mean? So like, I think basically what I'm saying is, what is it? Jason Goes to Hell, like I saw in the theater, but clearly like this movie is far superior to Jason Goes to Hell. Like if in my mind, right? Like, I think this and the third film are quintessential Jason's, I guess. Like it's him in the hockey mask and you know, killing kids in the middle of Crystal Lake. Like for the most part, I feel like it's pretty quintessential Jason. Like it hits all the marks. Like there's underage sex and there's pot and whatever, you know, like that kind of thing. But then there's also like this also has, like I said, that unique aspect where Tommy Jarvis is like your through line character, your identifiable character, like especially I think maybe at the age you and I first watched this. Like I think I probably was a little older than Tommy Jarvis, I think, though. Like I was probably in my teens or something, but probably not old enough to be these kids that are having the party. Do you know what I mean? Like I was probably somewhere in between Tommy Jarvis and the kids staying at this house, you know, when I first saw this film. So, but I, again, like I you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I think it's fair to say like we both, you know, like this movie. We both enjoy this movie. We think it's a good movie. I'd be willing to say it's one of the top tier Friday the 13th movies, even though I might not put it at the very top of my list, but I think it's way up there and what could conceivably be the number one Friday the 13th on a lot of people's lists. I don't know. Where do you see it? Like, where do you think it falls for you?
It is number one for a lot of people in the fandom, I guess. Part 6 has always been my favorite, but this is probably like a close second or third. Like, I really like this one. I really like part 2. And I have a lot of affection for part 3. Yeah, like this is definitely, you know, one of the better ones. I mean, Jason Goes to Hell, PU. I haven't watched it since probably like 2000 or 2001. And I don't, whenever I sit down and watch these, like I watched the first 8 Friday films last Halloween. I was like, do I want to watch Jason Goes to Hell? It's been a long time. And I was just like, ew, no, I'm not. I don't want to watch Goes to Hell. Like,
yeah, I don't. It's not. I don't need this in my Halloween that bad.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, this is definitely like one of the better ones in my opinion. Like this, part 6, part 2. Like those are, you know, those are my go-to ones. You know, part 7's fun too.
So then, is it safe to say to people listening, like, because what we've done 3, we've done 7, and then we've done 4, right? That's what we've done. So is it fair to say that you'll keep bringing these up as they come, at least, you know, aside from the PU ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if, you know, if we're still alive and we can do Jason X, like I would like to do that because I haven't watched Jason X in a long time, but not for the same reason as Go to Hell. It's just, I don't know. I just haven't felt like watching it or just haven't had the opportunity to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of those ones. Like I saw Jason Goes to Hell and Jason X in the theater. So there is an aspect of, you know, theatrical nostalgia for me for those. And then, like I said to you, you know, the third one was something that I got to have a theatrical experience with. But the rest of them, I have my thoughts on. I probably enjoy or don't enjoy them to various degrees. But, you know, I this one in particular, the final chapter, I mean, they seem to put some decent money into it. It seems to have some characters where you kind of like them before they die. And I think, you know, I don't know. I guess maybe we haven't talked about this too much, but like, do you, since we like these characters and we've expressed some, I don't know, sadness, or there's some bittersweet aspect to when they finally get fragged, whether it's off camera or on camera, is there a favorite kill in this? Like, cause you know how like the other ones, it's like, oh boy, he took out, what's her face, you know, with the diver gun, or he did the one guy with the fucking handstand, like, whoa, like he did the dude with the handstand. Like, that's epic, dude. Like, is there anything in this? Cause I feel like, you know,
there's one that makes me go, ooh. There's one in this movie. Every time I go, ooh, it's when a dude gets like speared in the groin at the lake.
Oh,
and Jason like raises him up in the air. I'm just like,
and you're like, man. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I think that qualifies, right? Like I think there's some good ones in this, and then there's some, like, you know, like we were already making fun of, like, Home Slice is like, he's killing me, bro. Like that one seems kind of dumb. And even the mom, like, that we've established, like, she does die, but it's off camera. Like that seems pretty weak sauce, right? But then, you know, I mean, the young lovers, you know, the dude that was singing gets his neck sent into the glass on the shower stall wall. Like, that's pretty, like, whoa. And then what's her face, the former virgin, like, gets the axe like blown right through her fucking chest, and, you know, like that, like a lot of those are kind of like, whoa, dude. So like, I think there's some good ones, and there's some ones that are kind of like ho-hum or whatever.
Yeah, like the fat chick with the banana.
Yeah. It's like the there's stuff like that, or the nurse and the douchebag in the morgue, like those don't seem as special as, you know, like what you're saying, the dude getting impaled in the junk and then getting raised up by the junk. You're like, whoa. Like, I mean, you know, I know, and not that we have any female listeners or many female listeners or whatever, but, you know, it's one of those things where if you're a dude and you see something like that, you're just like, whoa. Like, that's intense, you know? So.
Jason is back. Three times before.
Sorry, you change your mind?
You have felt the terror, known the madness, lived the horror. But this is the one you've been screaming for. Because Friday, April 13th, will be Jason's unlucky day. Friday the 13th, the final chapter, rated R.
See, Friday the 13th, the final chapter starts Friday the 13th at a theater near you.
Well, I think I'm pretty good, unless you have any other thoughts on this this particular film in the franchise.
I think I'm good.
Okay. Well, if you guys have any comments, questions, and or concerns, you can reach us at fanholespodcast@gmail.com. You can leave us emails there. We can be found on all kinds of social media. We're on Tumblr, Twitter/X. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, retweets, and stuff that we receive. We can be found. We're on Podbean, so you can find us there. And we can be streamed on all kinds of streaming. Just type in Fanholes Podcast, and you should be able to find the stream of our shows that goes out through Podbean on whatever podcatchers you find available. I guess if there's a favorite podcatcher of yours and we're not on it, how about that? How about you email us and tell us, and then maybe we can arrange things for you, or at least do our best. I guess that's going to be it for a while. And until the next time, this is going to be Derek WC. Gordon lives! He lives! Signing off.
And this is Justin signing off. He's killing me! He's killing me! Score remains the same.
What if in an alternate reality that was like Bill Shatner, where he's like, run away, quick, he's killing me, he's killing me.
How would Adam West do that scene? He's killing me, old chum.
Run away. He's killing me.